This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Basically, EMI, or Experiments in Musical Intelligence, began in 1981 in my garage.
It's kind of like David Cope invented a Frankenstein monster. And it's become something entirely different from what he had in mind in the first place. I don't know how many of you have followed David's adventures with his EMI, E-M-I.
EMI is Experiments in Musical Intelligence, and it's a computer program that composes music.
The main thing that's unusual about EMI is that it works.
The compositions that come out of the computer sound like what Beethoven or Mozart or Bach or Scott Joplin would have written.
And the most memorable of all reactions was one German musicologist or musician confronted him and harangued him for a half an hour with a big lecture about what was wrong with all of this business.
As he came to the end of this vehement spiel, becoming very animated and then I noticed hostile, he shook his fist and then pointed his finger at me and said the three words that I did know the meaning of, and that is, "Music is tot," which I knew meant music is dead. And I figured since he was pointing at me that I might be the culprit or the person he was accusing of having killed it.
Computers have been used in music in two or three different ways. They have been used for analyzing music. They have been used for instruments to actually produce sounds. And they have been used as composers or compositional aids. And the EMI system clearly fits into the compositional system of composers' aids, but it is also useful for analyzing music. Just about every other composition program I've ever heard has produced music that only the composer could love. Some systems are written by computer scientists and some by musicians. Generally, the ones written by computer scientists have fairly sophisticated structures in the program, but the music knowledge that they include is rather limited. They produce stuff that fits the rules in the books and is very, very boring. The musicians who write composition programs usually write very poor programs and often get more musically interesting results out of these programs because they reject anything that they don't like the sound of. Cope's program is one of the few that I know that produces reasonably good sound and has, at the same time, a reasonably sophisticated structure.
The length of time it takes for EMI to compose depends exclusively on how long the works are that you put in. First of all, it takes an awful lot of time just to sit at the keyboard and type the works in. So you could find me, 2 weeks doing nothing but coding works. The actual compositional process itself is the least cumbersome and the fastest. Once everything's set up and ready to roll, that could take anywhere from 8 hours to a weekend. What is interesting, I think, about the EMI Bach chorale production or composition is the fact that when it was finished, I didn't have a choir handy. So I tried the voices singing it out of the Emacs sampler, and the results were quite funny because I did not like what I heard at all. And there was a second there where I was going to let it go or not let it go, because it sounded so awful. And I decided, well, what the heck, it can't take up that much memory, so I actually put it back. So my first time at actually hearing the whole piece, since I almost, you know, killed it, was in the church the night of the first concert. Program that I've built is centered around a very large pattern matcher. Pattern matchers are artificial intelligence tools which define not just when something is something, that's fairly simple and routine. Is this exactly the same as that? What's really interesting in a pattern matcher is this something almost like that? And is that almost good enough? In Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, for example, a good way to look at the various patterns is that the beginning of the piece, which is bum 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 bum, later on in that piece it becomes dum bum 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 bum. Okay, bum 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 is not the same as bum 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 bum. Okay, now our ears say, because the rhythm is the same and that the first three notes are the same, that in fact, you know, that's a variant of the other one. And you want to build a pattern matcher that has the flexibility to see that.
On some of its best pieces and Emmy's best successes, it's very difficult to tell the difference between a real Mozart composition and the composition that Emmy has produced based on Mozart's style. It's as if Mozart composed it himself.
I spent a lot of hours up here by myself coding in works and number crunching and writing, writing programs. You get kind of strange. But when the Emacs poured out the first movement of this one, I jumped up and screamed and stuck my head down into this CPU area and screamed, "Woofie, are you in there?" I was convinced that Mozart had returned to life. The second movement is a slow movement, as is the case in Mozart's sonatas. And it's very interesting because the theme resembles the theme of one of the real Mozart sonatas, but not one that had been coded into the machine.
I'll play a little bit of each one. And if you can see the music, then it's cheating, because it's very obvious which is which from looking at the score. But just listening, I'm not sure I could tell if I didn't know this particular Mozart sonata. That's the theme of one, and the theme of another one is something like this. first one I played was really Mozart.
I did not even know the Mozart sonata which it imitated. So when I first heard it, I said, that's a really nice theme, and it really seems to make sense. And then when Mary Jane, my wife, heard it, she's a pianist who's certainly played or at least sight read through all of the Mozart sonatas, and she said, wow, that sounds very much like this other one. And then I saw the other one for the first time and was really quite taken aback by the resemblance.
I thought it was a little scary. I have played the beginnings of those two pieces, the real Mozart and the Emmy Mozart, for a student, and asked him to tell me which was which, and his reaction was, that's amazing. And he picked the wrong one. He picked the wrong one as being authentic.
If he put in one sonata by Mozart and asked this machine through its sampling and its study of the piece to create a Mozart sonata, that would not be enough data for the machine to be able to really come back with a sense of Mozart's style. But by putting in two sonatas, that he figured that the elements that were in common between the two would constitute Mozart's style, whereas the elements that were peculiar to one or the other would be just the peculiarity of that one sonata.
The essence of it is I apply the pattern matcher to, or Emmy applies the pattern matcher to a work, and gets what I call an image, which is essentially lists and lists and lists of occurrences of various patterns. So it ends up with this particular musical pattern happens 2,340 times. And this particular pattern happens four times. And then it does the same thing to a second work. So we have basically, you know, a minimum of two images. And the key here is then it takes one of the images and superimposes it over the other image. And when you do that, something extremely important happens. You see immediately that some of the motives increase twofold, and that other of the motives don't increase at all or increase by very small amounts. And what this shows you is that the motives that don't increase very much are ones that are local to the given work. But the ones that increase measurably or by large amounts are ones that are common between the two pieces. And these things are called stylistic signatures, things that help us recognize the style of the composer rather than just an individual work of that composer. Emmy was born out of a conflict between me and my own compositions and or compositional ability, to the extent that I had a commission in 1981 and I could come up with nothing. I had complete composer's block. And as a result of that, I sought help and found it, I thought at least at the time, and still think so, in the solace of a computer. The emulations of Bach and Mozart and so forth are a byproduct. I never intended those to happen. And in fact, I kept people from hearing them for a long time, figuring that it was my first step to some kind of Disneyland sainthood. I did those composers only to prove that it would be effective on my own style. Being unable to describe my own style, it was easier to try and describe the style of Mozart.
When it's used as an aid to get over a composer's writing block, I think it's a fascinating tool. Not so much for the fact that it can then produce music in the composer's own style and help them get around that block, but I think it's an incredible learning tool for the composer in what it shows that the composer won't do.
The fact that a machine can follow human instructions in doing something that hitherto only humans could do, that is, write fairly successful imitations of master Western European composers is, I don't know, it's almost uninteresting.
What I sensed was that it worked well in short, circumscribed pieces that could be easily defined and worked well by rules.
At this stage, it doesn't really know the difference between a good melody and a bad melody.
And then when it got into more complex pieces, it had somewhat more difficulty.
You can get likenesses, but the originality is never going to be there because it's based on copying the original work in the first place, isn't it?
I am first, last, and always, basically, a composer. And all the program that's gone by in the last 8 years, all the centering on musical style of mostly other composers has kept me from my work.
I heard the concert, the Baroque Music Festival, that several of the pieces that M.A. wrote were played next to the original compositions. And I found pieces that M.A. played were quite interesting to listen to. They did have recognizably similar styles. In some cases, it wasn't easy for me to tell which pieces were original and which pieces were composed by M.A.
You have this almost C.P. Bach work and a real C.P. Bach work side by side. You have this almost Mozart and this Mozart. And even without knowing anything of the details of how M.E. works, or even without knowing that it was done by a machine, just saying, okay, here's something that's almost like C.P. Bach, but it's not quite. What's the difference? And just thinking about that problem can shed considerable light on what's going on.
There's been a lot of questioning about sort of violating the sacred trust that each composer has left us by adding to it. But I think that that's something that the initial reaction might be to something like this, one of shock and horror. But when you step back and look at it objectively, it's really a study in style. And the amazing thing that we discovered with this was that there really hasn't been much study of style up to this point.
A full-blown definition of style in general and of particular styles really hasn't been focused on very much by musicians or musicologists.
What constitutes style is not just something interesting or musical, it is the use of that thing that's interesting over and over and over again over a period of time.
Every music historian, every concert goer who is at all sensitive can immediately or almost immediately identify the individual styles of a large, large number of composers. And how, in fact, do we do this? The sort of elementary observations that one finds in standard music history textbooks don't begin to explain it.
I can sit here in the particular program on the computer Mac Plus behind me and churn out 50 16-bar Mozartian phrases. And one could imagine a future in which people preferred to listen to fake Mozart over Mozart. I would hate to think that would happen.
The value of Emmy, first of all, is raising this whole issue about style and what style is, because as we said, it's an issue that's largely gone ignored. It also raises very interesting questions about the relationship between computers and people and music in general.
Emmy could be misused, I suppose, misused very, very badly.
From the totally pragmatic side, I think Emmy does have the potential to replace composers to some extent.
And I would imagine that in certain areas it would be very successful at it. Motion pictures, commercial work in particular.
You know, we tend to think of her as female somehow, because Emmy is sort of a female-sounding name. Is she going to put flesh-and-blood composers out of business, or is she going to go down to L.A. and start cranking out pop tunes and racking up platinum albums? And is she going to further threaten the already precarious existence that serious composers, art music composers, listen? I'm not losing any sleep over that at the moment.
I give assignments for the students to imitate Stravinsky and Debussy and other composers. And, a lot of times they come up with some striking results. And it is so far, better than Emmy. So there would be nothing to keep the studio or the company from hiring, a legit composer to imitate the style of Stevie Wonder without a computer or anything.
It may make people upset, I guess, but it's a fact. It happened. The computer did it, and it pretty much sounds like Mozart or Scott Joplin. So I guess they're just going to have to get used to it.
Would I buy an Emmy record?
Oh, yeah, I think I would, yeah.
I might, out of curiosity.
No.
Why not?
It's not, I don't find it to be as inspirational as the real music is. It's extremely fascinating and extremely interesting, but doesn't inspire me.
I don't regard it as very likely that computers will ever create great music.
It's true that I don't believe that any of the stuff that it's produced is anywhere near as good as the real stuff.
I think it's quite possible that computers will produce large quantities of the low-quality music that is already produced in large quantity by human composers. Part of the pleasure of any art is in the doing, not just in the final product. And I don't think that the existence of programs that can compose is going to stop people from wanting to do their own compositions.
Emmy was invented to save a composer. And I basically invented it so that I could keep on composing. The ultimate aim still is to create a workstation where I and other composers, if they so desire, can be inspired to continue on their own. The ultimate aim would be that I would sit at the keyboard and never push the return button to have Emmy do anything.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at UCTV.tv.